evening, everyone. Welcome to the December 4th regular meeting of the San Mateo County Harbor District Board of Harbor Commissioners. Can I have roll call, please?
Commissioner Brennan?
Here.
Commissioner Holsinger?
Here.
Commissioner Parravano?
Here.
Commissioner Tucker?
Here.
President Bernardo?
Here. We are at public comments and questions, but what I'd like to do is, I'll do that, but I'd like to change the order of the agenda a little bit. I just want to push up item number 4 to the very beginning. So that will be first, and then we'll go into items 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7. So we'll move up 4, okay? So public comments. I have some public comments here that are numbered for specific items, and then I have several that don't have numbers, so I'm going to put those up to the top. Nicole David.
Good evening, Commissioners. I understand that Pillow Point Harbor is charging disproportionately high offloading fees compared to other harbors in Northern California. And I still remember a meeting in early September when Mike McHenry and Larry Cortado urged the commission to please reconsider those fees because they were not competitive and they were forcing some of the commercial fishermen to offload outside of San Mateo County. I think there are 70 plus family fishing businesses at Pillar Point Harbor. Some of them have fished for up to 50 or 60 years here. It would be really upsetting to see them go because the majority of the board voted to adopt a policy that is not supporting the fishermen or the small family businesses. So in my mind, the fishermen are a very important part of the community that represents Pillar Point Harbor, and that the community, a part of the community that San Mateo County residents are very proud to have here. And the fishermen need the support of the Harbor District to stay in business. And so I would like to take the opportunity to urge the board tonight to take that into consideration when we discuss the offloading fees later on tonight in closed session. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Paul Muller.
Good evening. First, let me say I thought there was going to be an agenda item today specifically related to the eviction process, which I do not see. And I'll make it short because it's already been wasted enough of my time. I'm here specifically about one particular item, which is the eviction process that you all are using is not in conformance with California law. I have suffered through it. I have friends who've suffered through it. And I'll make my comments short. You need to change it. You need to fix it. And if you don't change it and fix it, I will continue to fight this until somebody does come in and change it and fix it. Very simple. You need an eviction process which does not intimidate people, which does not bully people, and which is in conformance with California. Fix it, or we'll get it fixed some other way. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two speaker cards here that are not of any particular item from Brian Rogers. So, do you want to come up now?
I have two different topics.
Okay, thank you. Oh, I see they're at the top. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That was more for my notes. The first one I want to talk about is the PRA requests. I look through the reports and I see that a lot of people on the staff are working. A lot, or at least are reporting that they're working on these PRA requests. Is there any documentation as to the amount of time being devoted to these, the number of PRA requests we're getting, the number they're completing in a week or a month or a meeting cycle? Because, you know, I know it was discussed at one meeting a while back, it might be time to hire somebody to specifically address the PRA requests. If it's taking more than 40 hours a week of the general staff's time, you're getting to the point where it needs to be an individual who just focuses on that and gets it done, instead of getting in the way of everybody else getting their job done. That was all I had on that one. And the other one was Robert's Rules of Order. which essentially I talked about at the last meeting. So I took notes on the last meeting and looked at it. Again, same rules are getting trampled on a regular basis, which is when you make a motion, make the motion. There should be no discussion of it beforehand. There should be no preamble into it. And in fact, it specifically states. Now, my vote's a little older than everybody else's, I noticed. So one of these days I'll get another copy, but for now, this is the one. But it basically states, it's usually inadvisable to attempt to include reasons for a motion to adoption within the motion itself. In other words, don't try to justify it. Once you make a motion, you have first right to speak on that motion because you made the motion. Therefore, that's when you put your reasons for doing it into there. That was a big one. That was in the first one. Let me see. Discussion of a motion when it's not, or staying on topic of a motion. Basically, last meeting we had a discussion of whether or not to put something on an agenda, and it turned into a discussion of the motion, or of the item that you wanted on the agenda. Had nothing to do with whether or not it was on the motion, on the agenda. Unfortunately, Robert, that falls to you. You've got to stop that. Say, this isn't acceptable. You need to stay on topic. The question is, do we put it on agenda or don't we? Or do we pass this or don't we? That holds true for when the public is talking. If they come up and start attacking members of the commission, and it has nothing to do with what the agenda item is, have them sit down. Then my all-time favorite. Let me read this one out loud, because this one was pretty good. Sorry about that. A member can condemn the nature or likely consequence of a proposed measure in strong terms, but they must avoid personalities and under no circumstances can they attack or question the motives of another member. In other words, the minute the discussion started going on as to whether or not there was a reason behind a motion, you got to stop them and say, I'm sorry. You can't question their reasoning, and you can't attack them personally. That's just unacceptable within the rules. If the rules get followed, that getting a counselor to give y'all a group hug is going to be unnecessary. The rules are here to get business done, and that's what your job is, get business done. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Leslie Webster.
I missed the last meeting, so I don't know. So far, I count three claims of harassment by upper management and commissioners against two members of the public and a fellow commissioner who have spoken out against your shameless incompetence. I wonder who's next. And to that I say, bring it on, because several of us have gone up against worse than you.
Thank you. Mr. Leonard Warren.
Because of your bad attitude toward televising meetings, it's difficult for me to watch the whole meeting. I hate watching video on the computer, and particularly having to watch it live is a real problem. But that's just one part of the whole problem, which is that this commission, at least the majority of this commission, three out of the five commissioners, have the most severely bad attitude toward public participation that I have ever seen in my participation with government, which basically starts in 1980 going to Coastal Commission meetings in LA. And in all that time, I have never seen a government agency that is as abusive to the public process as you are. You are not here to do your business. You are not here to do the Harbor District's business. You are here doing the public's business. The Brown Act says so in the first paragraph. I suggest you go read it. And in addition to that, I have never seen any board that is as toxic as this one is, that is as abusive to some of their own members as this board is. When I first got elected in 1997, we had a bitterly divided board for 2 years, but it was civil. It was polite. The minority members were not squashed into a corner. They were allowed to say what they wanted to say. We didn't run around looking for every possible picayune, arcane rule that we could dream up to try and nail them to the wall so they couldn't get their opinions across. And every single thing you've done to try and suppress Commissioner Brennan is ridiculous. And I don't know what this district is trying to cover up. There's two people here that are going to end up in jail. I just don't know why or when, but I guarantee it that we're going to get both of you in jail because you're protecting each other and you're covering something up, and we're going to find out what you're covering up.
Thank you. We are now at staff recognition.
Yes. Today I'd like to introduce three of the staff that are new to the district. And I'll ask them to stand as I read through this. Suzanne Walker is our new harbor worker at, we'll be going to Pillow Point soon. Suzanne comes to us with an extensive background in shipwright work for over 15 years. She is certified in sailing and navigation. Suzanne has also attended the landing school in Maine for boat building. Additionally, she has her BA from Boating College in Brunswick, Maine. And Suzanne replaces Ray Price, who left a few months ago. Matt Bach is our new deputy harbor master. He will be moving over to Oyster Point in the next couple weeks. We're doing cross training between both sites, so the staff can go either way right now. Matt comes to us with a combined total of 5 years of marina experience, 4 years with the city of Morro Bay, and a year at Santa Cruz. His background training includes marine firefighting, coastal piloting and navigation, rescue boat operations, and the K-38 jet ski rescue training, PC-832 as well, and a firefighting certification from Idaho. Matt also has his BA from UCSD. And Matt replaces Rick Krebs, who retired a few months ago. And lastly, we have Linda Azu. She is our new project manager, and she'll be working on both sides of the hill. And it's my pleasure to introduce her. Linda is a graduate of the University of California, San Diego, has a Bachelor of Science in Environmental Engineering. She has a project management experience with a background in sustainability and renewable energy and engineering. Please welcome all three of the new staff.
Welcome. We're very fortunate to have all three of you in the district.
Thank you.
Is there any other staff recognition? Okay, thank you. That was really nice, and I really like the reading of the bios because it really helps us better get to know the staff. Thank you. I just got another speaker card in for the general speakers, so I'm gonna allow it this time, and then we'll continue on the order. Bob, I'm sorry, the last name.
Cantillo.
Cantillo, Mr. Yeah. Cantillo. Would
I'm
you like to?
I'm really bad at Robert's rules, and I will say that I like the part about being respectful of other people and agreeing to disagree and not just taking personal attacks. I want to say that. You guys do a really good job of listening to people. In the several meetings I've come to, I've heard people say some pretty whacked out things and some downright mean things to you, and you listen politely and didn't interrupt them. I heard a gentleman a little while ago say something about threats and intimidation from you people, and say, you better fix it or else, or something, some such thing. And I didn't even hear a snicker at that point, but I have to say that it's nice that we live in a country where people can redress their grievances. I think at the very least for allowing people to do that, so you should be given some credit for that. So there you go.
Thank you, Mr. Hensko. Okay, we will continue now to consent calendar minutes of meeting November 6, 2013. Commissioner?
did make a motion that we approve the minutes of November 6th, 2013.
Okay, I hear a motion. Do I hear a second?
I'm not going to vote for this, so can we take it off the consent?
Okay, so do you like to have it for discussion?
I'm going to vote no. I think if we're going to do consent, don't we all have to vote for it? I don't remember how that works.
Right, we could, yes, we'll pull the item.
Okay.
So I hear a motion. Do I hear a second?
I'll second for purposes of discussion.
Okay, I hear a motion and a second. Okay, questions? You want to?
So I am not going to vote to approve the minutes, and we've talked about this extensively at past meetings, so I don't want to get too far into it tonight so that we don't take up too much time. But essentially, because we are no longer videotaping and broadcasting our meetings, the minutes are important in order to reference what happened at the past meeting. I noticed that our last meeting minutes have not been included in our board packet tonight, so we're looking at minutes from two meetings ago. And the podcasts aren't effective because you can't tell who's speaking in the podcast. So for me personally, the minutes are really important that they be accurate. I have not found these minutes to be accurate. And I also noticed that we whittled down the public comment to just the name of the person who made public comment, but not whether they supported or opposed the agenda item. And I think it's important to include something about what their comment was, and that's not included. And there are other issues that I have with the minutes, but I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you. So I have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Opposed.
One opposed?
One abstention.
And I'm sorry. So three ayes, one abstention, and one opposed. Motion carries. Okay, we are now at commissioner requests. So why don't we start over here on the right? Commissioner Brennan, commissioner's requests.
At two meetings ago, there was a request that was approved by the board to put the issue related to hoists at Johnson Pier on an upcoming agenda, and that was passed on November 6th, and it was not on the last agenda. It wasn't on this agenda, so I'd like to know when that item is going to be agendized. We were to get a report on the situation with hoists, because there was it was reported by the general manager that electrical was installed by one of the fish buyers to provide electrical for a third hoist for that particular fish buyer, and there was no additional information provided. So I'm wondering what the status of that agenda item is. That's a question for you, Peter.
We can put it on the January agenda.
Okay, great. Also wanted to know, at the last meeting, there was closed session, which was reported out on, and a decision to move forward with appraisal of the property in El Granada, potentially for a new location for the administrative staff. And I noticed that that wasn't on this agenda, and wondered if there was an update or any information about when that appraisal was going to be done.
I was planning to do that in my manager's report.
Okay.
I can give it now if you wish.
Can we wait and
that's
keep
fine.
It
in? It's in my report. Yeah, it's in my report.
Thank you.
And then there has been a request by the board, which is about a year old now, I believe, for a few revisions to the Wi-Fi report, and I'm wondering what the status. I noticed that's not on the agenda.
Well, the answer, I think I mentioned that the last time there was only a day, 2 days work between this agenda and the last one.
So when will the Wi-Fi report be on the agenda?
And I think it was a discussion last night. As soon as my manager lets me know it's high on the priority list, he has not done so yet.
Peter, could you tell us when the Wi-Fi report will be back on the agenda?
Yeah, I think we can plan on it for the January agenda for unfortunately, with the cancellation of the winter season board meetings, that gives staff a bit more room to finally deal with it.
So
I'll plan to put that on, I will put that on the January 15th agenda.
Thank you. I had a couple other things. Trying to decide if I want to ask these now or during bills and claims or something. There's a number of questions that have been asked repeatedly by some members of the public regarding the district's finances, and I'd like to follow up on some of those questions. When would you like me to ask those questions? Because I have a lot of questions about the audit, so this would be in addition to that.
Can we discuss those items? I'm trying to think where on the agenda we might discuss this. If it's regarding the audits, can we discuss it in item number two?
I have a lot of questions about the audit, but these are in addition to the audit. So this is following up on, you know how we've been getting many emails from the public regarding questions about the district finances?
Okay.
So these are following up on some of those questions. I could fit that in with the audit.
Okay, I'm just trying to think of where in the finance area it can fit, because these are finance-related questions.
They are,
so
yeah, and they're not related to bills and claims.
Well, how about under staff reports number 9, Director of Finance? You could ask them directly of our Director
okay.
of Finance.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll do that.
I think
that.
That's a really good fit.
And that's it for me.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Caravano?
No.
Okay. And I have one commissioner request. I believe that I made the request at the previous meeting or the meeting before regarding an informational item on the whole process of liens and evictions and how that works. So can I have a report at some point on that? And just an informational report.
Certainly. January?
Perfect. Thank you. I just wanted to get it on the calendar. Yeah.
At one of our meetings, you had asked to get a report on alcohol consumption by staff. Did that ever get followed up on?
That was a while ago, yeah. It was, I'm trying to remember the question. It was something about, I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me. Do we have a policy on drinking? I know that sounds kind of vague, but just, you know, for example, drinking during the lunch hour, drinking, you know, in general, you know, after hours.
Do you want an answer now?
At events.
Or you don't, I mean, if you'd like
to. You want a report? Is that what you're asking?
Whatever's more convenient. I don't want to get a whole report. Maybe you just answer it kind of at the next meeting and just maybe verbally.
Well, since, I'll do it verbally in the next meeting.
Yeah, I don't want to add, you know, have to create a report. That was my only commissioner's request. Commissioner Tucker?
Thank you. I have just one request for information. I didn't interrupt previous speakers, but I'm still confused. You've moved commissioner requests up to this part of the agenda, which is your project, I believe, in my opinion. And it says the Board of Public Commissioners may make public requests, comma, requests may be made to place items on future agendas. But then when we look back later, commissioner's statements and comments, it seems to me that it's still confusing, and that if you, in your wisdom, would take out the first sentence and remove, make a public request, and put that back where it's supposed to be, then we could deal with just motions for things on the agenda, which I thought was the purpose.
Thank
and
you.
I didn't want to interrupt, so I didn't say anything.
I don't understand what, I don't understand that suggestion. Could you rephrase it?
I don't know if I can rephrase it, but I'll explain it to you again. It seems to me there's two issues here on this particular agenda item. One is an individual up here, one of us, may make public requests, whatever that means. And the second part of that says requests may be made to place items on the agenda. Traditionally, this item is supposed to be just to place items on the agenda, not to make reports or to ask things from staff. The purpose of that would be coming later when it says commissioner statements and comments.
But that sounds like your opinion. I didn't make
that. Well, I'm only one person, of course. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But if you wish, I'll make a motion then that be changed, Mr. President.
Would this be the time to make that motion?
Yes, it would. It says here, request may be made to place fewer items on
it. It actually would, and you know what? Actually, that was confusing to me, too. And I think it's because it's just been mistitled, Commissioner's Request. It's really agenda setting, if I'm not mistaken. That's kind of what this was going to be for, is for placing things on agenda and having a vote on things to be on the agenda. Or am I incorrect?
Well, in the past, we had one item, and you decided to split it into two. The item was commissioner's requests and commissioner statements. So you decided to split commissioner requests and commissioner statements to two different times in the meeting, which seemed reasonable to try to move the meeting along. But we had to do the commissioner requests at the beginning of the meeting because the board voted to put the time limit on meetings, and so then we weren't getting to an opportunity to make commissioner requests. And since the board had also voted to not allow commissioners to get things put on the agenda without first making a request of the board and getting majority
yes.
vote to have the item placed on a future agenda, since there was all that rigmarole added in, then we ended up needing to move it to the beginning of the meeting versus the end of the meeting. So it was always requests and statements. It was not agenda items and statements. The reason it became agenda items, I think, in Commissioner Tucker's mind is because of his wanting to have this delay in commissioner's ability to put agenda items on the agenda.
We can't make assumptions of what other people are thinking. So I'm just going to say that I think that we're basically saying the same thing here. A request and wanting to put something on the agenda are the same thing.
No,
I think that's what we're trying to say.
I disagree, because sometimes you like to make a request of staff, like you just did that. You just did that a few minutes ago.
Right, wasn't that in the vein of a previous request to put something on the agenda? It was a reminder similar to the informational item that I had asked for, the eviction and liens. That was to place something on the agenda.
But I think, if I'm understanding Commissioner Tucker, what he's saying is he doesn't want those requests being made. He just wants formal requests for agenda items. And what we did today was I asked for where's the Wi-Fi report that was a past request for an agenda item that was agendized and then was supposed to be re-agendized for a future meeting but never was. And so I'm following up on that. You're following up on stuff, but that's different than actually asking for a new agenda item. So see how that's different?
I see what you're
and
saying.
And they're both requests.
And I would say that requesting of information and following up on other things should best be served to come later in the agenda where it says commissioner requests and statements.
Well, I
so if we
disagree.
Keep them if we keep them severed, it would be much easier and clearer for us to understand. Then I'll ask for a point of information. Is it your opinion to change that, or would you rather have it formally done?
I'm hearing both what you're saying, and I'm agreeing with both of you, because these are two different things. The first piece, the reason why we did, Commissioner Brennan is correct, we put it in the beginning, because we wanted to make sure that we were able to place things on the agenda in the beginning. And then the commissioner's statements are exactly, comments, it could be wishing, the public happy holidays, that type of thing. So those are different to me. A commissioner's statement and then agenda setting are two different things, and we did separate them out. So that's kind of, in my mind, what the difference between a statement is and then this section, which is requests and agenda setting. So, do we have to vote on that? I'm sorry, do we have to vote on that?
If it makes it easier,
let me,
Mr. President, with your indulgence, then I would move that the agenda item referred to as commissioner requests be renamed as agenda setting, and then the paragraph below state that the Board of Harbor Commissioners may make requests to have future items placed on the agenda.
I would so move.
So I'm not understanding that. You're suggesting...
May I see if I get a second first?
Okay, I heard there's a motion, so is there a second?
Second.
Yeah, I hear a motion and a second. Okay, discussion, questions. Commissioner Brennan, you had a question?
I didn't even follow what Commissioner Tucker said, so I need him to restate it so I understand what he just said.
Restate your motion, please.
I move that the agenda item known as Commissioner Requests be renamed Agenda Setting, and that the paragraph below be called "The Board of Harbor Commissioners may make requests to have future items placed on agendas."
Okay, so that's not what I understood Commissioner or President Bernardo to just say, which was that what we were doing during this agenda item was making requests that were related to agenda items, as well as making formal requests for a future agenda item, that we were doing both of those things during this time, and statements at the end of the meeting would be specifically if somebody wanted to make some sort of grand proclamation or wish somebody a happy birthday or, you know, happy holidays, whatever. So I think that by restating it the way that we have, it doesn't allow for a commissioner to make, to ask any questions about agenda items that they may have asked for previously that never got put on an agenda, or to follow up on reports that were supposed to be provided after an agenda item as a follow-up that the board requested, you know, that sort of thing.
That's exactly correct. And it suggests that those items that you say follow-up would be best served by being placed later in the agenda on the commissioner's statements and comments. And this be specifically, as the motion points out, just for items to be made for the agenda.
And Commissioner Tucker, so not informational requests?
Not informational requests.
Informational would be pushed
back to the commission statements and comments.
Okay, I see. I
so
see
we might not be able to ask those things because of the time limit.
Yeah. The chair could always move up the time limit or change the agenda item.
Okay, thank you. There's a motion.
We're having discussion on the motion. I'd like to comment on.
Sure. After Commissioner Caravano.
Absolutely.
Commissioner Caravano.
So I can probably extend this a little bit more to into the confusion sphere.
Okay, let's find out.
This is a motion for placing this item on a future agenda. We're not going to vote on whether this format gets changed tonight. We're voting on placing this motion for on the next.
That's my understanding.
That's our rule.
That's our understanding.
Okay. Okay.
And Commissioner Holzinger.
I think Commissioner Caravano said it well. The purpose of this here is to get this issue up for vote on the next agenda. And to be discussing the pros and cons is simply not necessary or appropriate this time.
Understood. Okay, so I hear a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Holzinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Piravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. And this will be placed for a vote in the... And discussion in the next agenda will be placed on the next agenda. That the change, the proposed change. Okay. We are now that's right, thank you. We are moving item 4 up. So let me see, first of all, with regards to speaker cards, because what we're going to do is we're going to have the report, then we're going to have the speakers, and then we're going to have the commissioners. So item 4. Who is introducing item 4? Okay, our council.
Ms. Savory. What we have in front of you this evening is a request for authorization to retain the services of 2 separate outside investigators to look into 3 separate complaints that the district has received. And Arlen Kachalia from Lieber Cassidy is advising you on this matter. She's here this evening and can answer any questions on the contracts. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Kachalia.
Good evening. Ms. Savory has presented the contract, so I'm here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. And we don't have any speaker cards for this particular item. So, Commissioner Tucker.
To either of you, I suspect our counsel. Is there a need for any of us to recuse ourselves that are directly involved in this?
I don't believe so at this point.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I have some questions.
Okay. Mr. Brennan?
I seem to remember, did we already vote to approve the contract with LCW, because I know tonight we're being asked to approve contracts with two other attorneys, Amy Oppenheimer and who's the other one? Karen
Kramer.
Kramer Workplace Investigations. Did we also previously approve a contract with LCW?
The district has been in contract with LCW for
many
years, decades, to provide employment-related counseling and services to employees.
Could we be provided with that contract? Because that way we'd be seeing the full menagerie of contracts related to harassment complaints.
Sure. I don't have that visiting with me, but I'm sure we can provide it to you. Yes, they have been your employment law attorneys for many years.
Well, I'm kind of new to the board, so I didn't know that. So could you email that to us?
I will work with Peter to get that contract, yes.
Okay. Do you think we could have that by next week?
I don't know. We'll get to it as soon as we can.
Okay. So I was wondering if we could get an update on costs to date. Would you be able to provide us with that information?
Cost as to what?
Cost for the various work that's been done.
Mr. President, I raise a point of order.
Yeah.
The issue here is the approval of the recommendation for these two hires, and the inquiry now is going far afield of that.
Okay.
I can ask that question. Why can't I?
I think that's a valid question.
I mean, we should know the cost. We're the board.
I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt. There are no costs. We are just asking for authorization this evening to enter into these contracts.
Okay, so today there's no cost. There's no invoicing.
These individuals have not been retained. That is the purpose of this item, is to ask whether the board wishes to retain these individuals or not.
Okay. And just to clarify, I understand that, or I think I understand this correctly, there's one overarching investigating law firm, which is LCW, and then there are two other attorneys that are working underneath LCW. Is that how this is set up? And they report to you guys, or how does that work?
LCW is not providing any investigative services. LCW is the district's employment law attorneys. It is their recommendation that two outside investigators be retained to investigate complaints, pending complaints.
So I'm, okay, I guess why I'm confused is I was interviewed for about 4.5 hours by LCW, and now I'm supposed to be interviewed again by Amy Oppenheimer, and I'm wondering why I'm being interviewed by the two different law firms instead of just one law firm. And if there's a good reason for that, I'm sure there's a good reason for it. I'd just like to better understand the process.
Yeah, thank you. And actually, if I could just interrupt here. Ms. Savory, I think this is a really good opportunity for all of us, including the members of the public, to understand how this works in terms of, if there is pending lawsuit or litigation, how the whole subcontracting works, how an investigator may be hired, you know, for certain duties, things like that. Can you kind of just lay the landscape of how that works?
Sure. When complaints are received, the law in California requires that the employer determine the nature of the complaint. Once the nature of the complaint has been determined, then there needs to be an investigation of the allegations in that complaint, because a complaint is when received, a statement from someone's opinion about something. The law then requires that an investigation be conducted to determine whether or not that complaint is a valid complaint or not. So at this point, all we have done is determined the nature of the complaints. That triggers now the need to move to the second phase, which is to investigate those complaints. So it just so happens that these investigators, and Ms. Chalia is recommending, are attorneys. They will not be acting as attorneys. They will be acting as investigators.
Thank you.
So does that mean, just so I understand, since I was interviewed by LCW and now I'm going to be interviewed again by the investigator, by one of the investigators, does that mean that each person who filed a complaint, since there are three complaints now, will be interviewed by LCW and then re-interviewed by a secondary investigator? Is that how the process works?
I will defer slightly to Ms. Cacciali on this one, but it's my understanding that on each of these complaints, there was a determination made by Ms. Cacciali about the nature of the complaint, and now they will be referred to the investigators to investigate.
Right. Two of the three complaints that we received were in written form, so there was no need for me to investigate or to interview the complainant for the nature of their allegations.
That helps explain. And so is it set up so that there's a separate investigator for each person who has a complaint? Because if that were the case, why wouldn't there be three different investigators?
In this situation, I determined it would be the best course of action to have one investigator serve as the investigator for two of the three complaints. It would is what I determined to be the most efficient manner.
Okay. And counselors, please, let's be very careful. I know we're dealing with sensitive items here. I mean, these are personnel issues and very confidential in nature. So I just want to caution everyone. I know we're kind of having this discussion now. I know that a lot of this does happen in confidential environments. So I just want to caution everyone to just make sure we're not violating some sort of, you know, attorney-client privilege here.
Mr. President, can I make a motion?
I have one more question.
Okay, Commissioner Brecker.
So I know I made my complaint on August 7th, and the secondary other two complaints came in mid-October, but I noticed that wasn't mentioned in this paperwork that we got from you guys. I don't think it was anyway. Just the dates.
I haven't referred to any dates in these. These contracts. I'm not sure what you mean.
Oh, are those dates not correct?
There's no dates in here.
I thought I read. Oh, I must have read the dates in that other letter that you sent. Thank you.
Mr. President?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Hunter.
I'm going to make a motion that the Board President Robert Bernardo be authorized to execute contracts for both Karen Kramer and Amy Oppenheim.
Okay, I hear a motion. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Okay, I hear a second. I hear a motion and a second.
Any other questions?
Okay, roll call, please, since we're dealing with finances and money.
Commissioner Brennan?
Aye.
Commissioner Holsinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Parravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. All opposed? None. So motion passes.
Thank you.
So now we are back to item number two, and I have some speaker cards here. I have two speaker cards, so we're gonna have a report, then we're going to have the public speakers, and then we're going to have commissioners' questions. So who is going to give this report?
We have Joe Art and Brett here, our auditors.
Would you like to introduce them and explain why they're here and who they are and give us some background?
Joe Arch is here again for the second year. He is here to answer questions that the commission or might have. They spent some time in the field and auditing our books, and they have their report before you.
Okay, and just kind of background, I mean, this is an annual thing, and this is standard practice?
Or yes, we're required to have an annual.
Okay, we're required to. Okay.
Yes, every year. Okay. And have so.
Okay. Thank you. So, and I think Mr. Arch might go a little bit into that and those requirements, those mandates. So, please.
Okay. Thank you. So, the annual audit is required by the California Government Code, and essentially, you know, this is a lot earlier than the first year, because the first year is the infrastructure valuation that delayed the report last year. So this is actually more of a regular type of timing out of the financial statements and audit report issues. Typically, by the end of the calendar year, you want to have your report before you. to look at and to review. So as far as the audit goes, we look at a sample of transactions and different systems. We look at internal control procedures. We look at various account balances based upon what we determine is something that would be significant to the financial statements when you look at them in their entirety. So what we do, and it's kind of outlined in our report, our auditor's report, which is at the beginning of the report for you, it kind of identifies what management's responsibility is, what our responsibility is. It's a little bit more detailed than the report that was given to you in the prior year. So this is kind of important in terms of where the division and our line of responsibility is for these financial statements. And they're essentially, it kind of spells out that they're your financial statements. So we just, as an independent third party, we audit them and determine if they are materially correct. And that's...
I'm sorry, if I could interrupt you, Mr. Arch. What did you just say? If they are...
Materially
okay, and
correct.
Can you please define that? What does that
so
mean?
So materiality is a level of determination. It's based on our judgment, based on what the balances are in the financial statements. And what that is it's what would sway someone to think that financial condition was either improving or deteriorating, essentially change their mind as to the way they look at the numbers. And so we established that, and of course don't tell anybody about it, in order to do our testing and to identify whether or not we believe that the balances presented in the financial statements are at a level that we believe is correct, to a point. So it's not, you can never be completely sure that a number is a number because some of the things are estimated. So if you and take an account like depreciation, which is an estimate of the wear and tear on your assets, that, given a certain number may sway you one way or the other. So that's why you've had an infrastructure valuation, because there was a significant balance that needed to be presented on the financial statements in order for you to present all of your capital assets on the books. So that's kind of in general terms, like trying to stay away from more accounting terms as to how to present it. But so that's kind of how we look at things too. Other than that, I mean, I'm basically here to answer questions. With that.
We might ask you to come back up again, but right now what I'd like to do is I'd like to take the two public comments right now. So,
okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I'm sure we'll have some. I have Mr. Ullman and Ms. Webster.
Understanding how we could pass it on. I know that there's a whole bunch of auto deposits and checks that were credited to the accounts, and this is why it's difficult to know who owes us what. And so the bank balances will show one thing, and the balances in the accounting program should show something different, assuming that what I'm saying is correct, that deposits were credited to people. balances on the, in the accounting program, but the deposits didn't get made to the bank. So right there, I believe there should be through check reconciliation. You should quite see that there's a divergence between the bank balances and what the bank's telling you, which accounting program is telling you. I would wonder if is it normal to carry negative balances on the accounts receivable report, like tens and tens of thousands of dollars in negative balances. We originally were told that those negative balances on check like accounts receivable reports were due to deposits that had not been refunded. But recently I was told that the really large ones, the negative $7,000, negative $10,000 ones, represent prepayments. Apparently you have people that will prepay. Is carrying that on accounts receivable the proper thing to do? Shouldn't that be in a separate account where deposits are held and prepayments are held, so it's not being commingled with money that you're actually using for operating expenses? I'd like to hear that addressed. And the third thing that was asserted to me the other day is that we're not an enterprise district. And then it was, then the assertion was correct to say is, we've never been run like an enterprise district. And I know there are very specific accounting rules for enterprise districts. And so, again, since we haven't been running like an enterprise district for quite some time, and we are required to run like an enterprise district, or at least if the assertions that I've been told are true, how can we pass them on? How can we come closer? So I'd like to hear those questions asked. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have Ms. Leslie Webster.
Commissioners, I'm surprised that the recent audit did not include a review of the district's accounting procedures. Given the missing check debacle and complaints by tenants concerning accounting and billing issues, it seems prudent and wise to recommend an independent accounting procedure audit.
Thank you. Okay. So now we are at commissioner's questions. Commissioner
Tucker. If I may, just a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Did you find that our bank statements were reconciled current?
Yeah, they're current.
That's an important factor. I guess in your lingo, you would say that we are practicing generally acceptable accounting procedures.
Well, yeah, the audit actually indicates that.
I know, but many of the public have not had the opportunity to read your audit as we have.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, did you find any improprieties or needs for to make suggestions to us to change things?
They would have appeared in the secondary communications letter.
That's correct, and I didn't see that. Does that mean you have none for us?
No, that's correct.
So then I must assume by that we're doing things correctly. It may or may not come up, but there was a problem that we experienced with one of our employees that didn't deposit checks immediately when they were supposed to be deposited. And without getting into too much detail, did you find fault with that? Are you recommending anything to eliminate that? Is there a need for us to be concerned?
No. And again, that would have appeared in the communications letter. That we... basically, what happened was district personnel found it, corrected it. They notified us about it when we came out for our field work. And we reviewed the receiving process to determine if. So for an audit standpoint, we looked to see if we believe that particular situation is considered isolated. So it's an isolated incident. And that's basically what we determined through our own procedures to determine if it was pervasive throughout the entire district or just isolated. And we made the determination that it was isolated to a personnel issue.
Yeah, and we rotate the positions here, as you might understand. And I'm treasurer this year. And when this came out and we made it public, and it got plenty of air, in my opinion, I met with staff to see if there was something we could do to change that. And for the life of me, I couldn't think of anything.
Yeah. I mean, it's an employee, it's a lower level employee, and they're more of a receptionist that takes in a couple of tennis buddies.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that you say there's nothing that you would do. I just wanted to quote one sentence from page 37 of 38 pages. On the bottom it says, during our audit, we did not identify any deficiencies in internal control that we consider to be material weaknesses. However, material weaknesses may exist from time to time. And I certainly want to thank you. It's a very illuminating report, very thorough. This is your second year with us?
Yeah,
is there 1 year left on your contract?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I have a question. Any other questions?
I have questions, but go ahead because I'm not quite ready.
Okay. My simple question is this. Are we in your, I basically heard it, but I want to ask this question. Are we in full compliance with government auditing standards, and are we in full compliance with the law?
We're not attorneys, so we can't speak to that side of it, but as far as the accounting principles, yeah, our opinion states financials are presented in accordance with generally accepted
practices. Okay, thank you, that's all I wanted to know.
And if you wanted me to answer the comments that were made about the speaker comments.
Actually, that'd be great because it'll give an opportunity.
Yeah,
for,
so that,
could you please address those? One was Enterprise District and then the other question.
Okay. So essentially the way the district is formed is through California code. And the way you operate functionally from an accounting standpoint is based upon certain criteria, and you get most of your funding through user fees. So that's what, from an accounting standpoint, that's why you operate as an enterprise operation. It would be different if you operate as a governmental operation. The presentation would be different. And the code that you were formed under, which I believe is the Harvard Code, primarily indicates that you're an enterprise operation. So,
yeah, you had one thing for that? The only thing that differentiates us from an enterprise zone or enterprise capacity is the fact that we receive property tax. If we did not receive 4.3 last year, 5.1 this coming year, $1 million in property tax, then we would be a true enterprise function.
Well, yeah, I mean, the property tax is a different issue.
Well, that's what makes us quasi-enterprise.
Well,
that's what the confusing part is.
No, because, you know, water districts get property tax, sewer districts get property tax.
But they're not formed by the state of California through Harbor Navigations.
Yeah, but they're formed through the water code. So it's, you know, there's similarities between special districts that make them more enterprise-like. So if you get a predominant amount of your revenue from user fees, you're an enterprise operation, regardless of whether or not you get property tax.
Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
No, it's okay.
Thank you.
Well, that was helpful because I kept hearing mixed things about whether or not we were an enterprise district, and now I can clearly tell people we are an enterprise district. So thank you for explaining that.
Mm-hmm. And there is a difference between, Commissioner Tucker indicated, you know, enterprise zones. Enterprise zones are more of a tax terminology. So that's governed by the federal government, and you know, that bears no relationship to the district. So I just wanted to clarify.
Okay, so we're an enterprise district. Thank you. So I have some questions. Let's see here. The first one relates, sort of relates back to the issue with the missing checks. I just wondered who was reconciling the checking accounts when the previous finance director was with the district, because that's when, you know, the checks started becoming missing back in early 2012. So who was responsible for doing the reconciliation at that point?
Tara Sabrina and Spencer?
I was just going to say the checks were not missing. That's, it gets
they
confusing.
They were found.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, but they were missing for like a year. So that's what I meant.
Okay.
So when, who was responsible for reconciling the checks that were not reconciled? Whose job was that? Like, what job title does that?
It was, I think the checks we're talking about starting in 2012 were $22 parking checks.
There were parking checks and there were slip checks. There was a whole...
No, if you look at the organizational report that she pulled together...
I'm just talking about all the checks that were missing, the whole batch.
Yes. Should we take a break until Commissioner Tucker comes back? Or? Okay.
Could we just answer that one question?
I'm sorry for interrupting you, Commissioner Brennan. Let's answer this one question and then we'll go into break.
So what job title is responsible for reconciling the checks that come in to the various offices? Oyster Point
Marine? The accounting technicians receive the checks.
Okay, and then who reconciles the checks?
The checks get deposited by the accounting technician.
Okay.
And then the accountant, which is me, does the bank reconciliations.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. So are we going to take a break?
Are we taking a break, commissioners? Or not?
Not yet.
Commissioner Brennan, please continue.
Okay.
And are these questions for him or questions for me?
I have questions for the auditor. First question. Did you follow State of California Controller guidelines for accounting for harbor and port districts? And this is sort of a two-part question. Did you verify that the accounting practices were in accord with those guidelines?
There are no State Controller harbor district guidelines. What you're probably referring to is the State Controller's minimum requirements for special districts, which is part of our audit. I guess to answer your question shortly, yes.
Okay. So I'm going to call that then guidelines for special districts
is more accurate. For special districts.
Okay, and then thank you for that. Did you sample accounts receivable and customer deposits to determine the statistical accuracy of the accounts?
Statistical, what do you mean by statistical?
Just accuracy. Did you check them for accuracy? Did you do a sampling of accounts receivable and customer deposits?
Yes.
Okay. And why are customer deposits included in the enterprise section of the statements and not the restricted according to the state controller's specific guidelines regarding these accounts? Can you speak up?
I don't believe there are any requirements that indicate that you have to report them as restricted. Deposits are liabilities of the district. It's not unusual to have your deposits with your accounts receivable accounts because that's where you include the customer record. So if you have a customer record that has billing associated with it, to more easily apply that deposit when somebody leaves or terminates a contract or something like that, it's easier to include it with along with the receivable.
So no.
I can't say no because I don't believe there's a requirement to have a restricted.
So no requirement is your
right.
Opinion. Okay. Thank you. Are you aware of the missing checks? We've already determined that you are. When the public inquired into these and asked for the accounts receivable listing, they noticed that there were negative balances. They inquired about these and were told that this was due to customer deposits indicating that the deposit deposits were not kept in separate liability accounts. What is the situation here? Are they kept in separate accounts?
Yeah, they are. They're in a deposit payable account.
Deposited in a separate general ledger account shows the amount of deposits.
Yeah. So they're not...
They're not commingled.
They're not commingled. It's... The customer record may include both, but that billing amount is shown in accounts receivable, and the deposit is shown as a deposit payable. So they're in two separate places.
Okay, so they are in two separate accounts.
Yeah. There is an account called, I'm referring to page 12 in the audit report, customer deposits.
Okay, thank you. I'll make a note, page 12. The state controller's guidelines call for the restricted funds to be accounted for in separate restricted assets section of the balance sheet. Are the funds held for debt service the only restricted funds? If so, how are they held? By what investments, et cetera? And I want to keep going with this. I'm almost done. Customer deposits. It would appear should be there, but it doesn't look like they are. What about grant funds? Does the district have or hold any grant funds with restrictions, or are the grants shown in other parts of the audit unrestricted?
Okay, so the first part of the question is with regard to district bond funds, which typically are held as restricted cash flow investments specifically for bond issues. That is, of course, if the bond issue has a cash with fiscal agent amount. And those balances, when it comes to debt, are separated and are shown as restricted cash flow investments within, again, on page 12. The customer deposits are not required to be separated out in terms of the cash amount. They're only to be reported as a liability, which again, they are on that same page. As far as the second part of your question, I can't recall what.
About the grants.
About the grants. It depends, first of all, what the source of the grants is. Any revenue for grants, if you have any, are shown on page 13 under the caption capital grant. Any grants would appear in this section called non-operating revenues and expenses in the financial statements. And not only are they accounted for separately in the financials, but the general ledger with the district would have it reported similarly. So you could identify what the grant is and if it had any specific restrictions. Typically, grants are, when they're capital grants, are for a specific purpose in which you might have a capital expenditure associated with it and are used to construct an asset or to use on a project. And so those items, the actual asset item, would be owned by the district and reported in the capital asset section.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Can you prepare separate balance sheet statements for restricted funds? Can you prepare separate sources and uses statements for enterprise and restricted funds according to state guidelines?
Okay, again, I don't think there are any state requirements. The sources and uses, again, are specifically used for bonding or debt types of instruments, usually as part of an official statement or a funding of debt. The underwriter or the financial advisor preparing those statements would include where you're going to get the money to pay for the project, and that's what the source of the statement is. It doesn't really belong in a set of financial statements. Typically, those official statements include the audited financial statements as support for the sources of uses statement. They're your financial statements. If you wanted informational types of reporting in this report, then they would be presented as separate schedules in the past.
So that could be provided?
Well, I don't know. I don't see a need for it because the only the purpose of the sources and uses statement was that you were going to issue debt. And in that case, a more appropriate statement to go in here would be what's called debt capacity. So basically, your ability to cover the debt payment. And that certainly is something that could be included in this report.
What would we call that again?
It's called debt capacity. Schedule of debt.
I'm sorry, say that again. Debt.
Schedule of debt capacity.
Can I just ask a kind of piggyback question on this? Is that related to like a debt service coverage ratio?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Thank you.
Because
your terms are different, and I know that where I work in a government agency, mm-hmm. we have similar terminology, and that's what we call it, debt service coverage ratio.
Yeah.
There's a certain number that you want to make sure that you're not
paying your debts. Usually that calculation is something that we would do anyway as part of to make sure that you have the money to cover your debt.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Please continue.
But usually you would do that, but have you done that?
Yeah, and we do it every year because typically that's part of the covenants within the debt issue that you have a certain coverage.
So you could add, though, more information?
We could add that schedule, yeah. It wouldn't be
a big deal to do.
No big deal.
Could we get that included? Just email it or something?
No, I mean, we'd have to append the statement.
I see. Okay, next question. Thank you. Did and can you verify that the 6/30/13 investment report matches with the Commission's policy on reporting investments, and does it conform to the audit 6/30/13 balance sheets, the audited balance sheets?
Well, if you're talking about the investment report, a lot of times it's prepared prior to our doing our audit. So the balances could change from that report to the audited balance, given the timing of when that report is required to be presented to the board and when our audit is presented. So potentially, there could be differences. I wouldn't say categorically they match, but we look at the total based upon information that we do confirmations to verify the balances that are presented in the financial and the general ledger. So we can say that they match. These financial statements match what's in the general ledger. Anything other than that presented to the board, I can't.
I understand. Okay. You mentioned some of the investment policies in your notes. Is the district in compliance with all of its adopted policies? Does the investment report furnished to the board comply with policy 4.4.1, are signed certification forms current. Related to the policy. And you could get back to me on this question if you don't know that policy.
I'm not familiar with the certification form for investments.
Okay, let's keep moving. Thank you.
But so just what I think you might be asking is whether or not your investments conform to, you know, basically state guidelines. And yeah, they do. So just kind of as an aside, you don't really have any investments, so you're not as exposed to like market changes and those types of things. You know, given that the interest rate is arbitrarily low, I think about the only thing that you have is a considerably low amount of interest income or investment. But that doesn't mean that you have any investments that would cause you to be at risk.
Okay. So policy 4.7.1 calls for an annual inventory to be completed by 6:30. Did you examine this report and reconcile it to the financial statements?
Annual inventory of the investments?
I'm not looking at the policy right now. I just looked it up earlier.
You don't have any physical securities or investments that you could inventory. So there's no need for that.
Okay. In light of the missing check event, which occurred during the period that you were conducting your audit, did you examine the policies, procedures, and controls for handling the receipts?
Yes.
And did you make recommendations on any improvements that might be made so that that sort of problem wouldn't happen again?
We discussed procedures, but we didn't have any specific recommendations that weren't already going to be done by the district staff. And if we had, they would have appeared in the management or the communications level.
Did you verify that the bank reconciliations were performed in a timely manner according to the commission adopted policy 4.6.1? The policy calls for, in quotes, on a regular basis, at least bi-monthly, the Finance Committee of the Board of Harbor Commissioners will review all bank account reconciliation information. Given there is not a Finance Committee currently, and I don't recall there ever being a Finance Committee, so it must have been a long time ago when there actually was one, then the whole board should be reviewing. But during my tenure, I have not seen a reconciliation.
Okay. So essentially, the reconciliation is what caused it. And so they were performed in a timely manner. Essentially, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the reconciliations are reviewed by the treasurer. So I believe the treasurer is acting in the purview of the Finance Committee.
Well, it seems that that's not in sync with the policy, but that's a topic I can take up later. So when you say that the missing checks were caught by the reconciliation in a timely manner, how is it that there were missing checks that were missing for like a year? How come they weren't caught sooner?
Well, I can't speak to that because one of the things with the types of checks that they were is incidental, like fines and those types of things. That isn't what got caught. What got caught were the receivables. So it wasn't possible to find that. It just became what was found after it was investigated, after the receivable issue.
So given recent staff changes, are the bank signature cards and supporting resolutions current?
You voted on it.
Yeah. Okay, I just wanted to double check. Has the general manager received any reimbursements or made credit card charges that should be submitted as an expense report and submitted to the board for approval according to the commission's policy?
I don't know that.
I think everything that Peter charges or any expense he has goes through the president. So Emily would bring, like, say, his Cal card or something like that to the president to review.
Okay, so yes, just the president reviews it.
Yeah.
Okay. Is the district complying with Chapter 36?
Oh, yeah. And he reviews it upon payment.
Okay.
The treasurer.
Is the district complying with Chapter 36 of the California Government Code, Section 82048.5, Policy 4.2.3? Summary, did you, the auditor, evaluate the compliance with commission-adopted policies?
Commission, yeah. I mean, we look at the policies and how they affect the controls and the transactions that occur.
So you look
at the policies in relation to the financial policies that relate to the general ledger and the numbers that are reported in the general ledger.
Okay.
I'm almost done, you guys. Since this is the only financial information that the board has received since the last audit, it would have been useful to have the following information: a statement of the actual results versus the board adopted budget for 2012-13, a statement of the budgeted versus actual to date of each capital project, and a statement of future fund requirements. It's just a comment.
Okay. Did you want me to respond to that?
If you'd like to.
So, budgetary information for an enterprise district is used primarily as a monitoring device to allow you to essentially stay within the means. It's not a required statement to be recorded in the financial statements. What I might suggest is that if you want budget to actual type information, that information be presented as part of your budget process, and possibly even have staff prepare what's called a mid-year review or some other financial report that helps you identify, for your budgeting cycle, whether or not, the projects are on target, the accounts are within budget, and it would help you with your budget process for the next year as well.
So
that comes, December ends, we should get all our numbers in by January, so the first meeting in February, so you would have your mid-year budget to action.
Early February.
First meeting in February, for sure.
And then I'm wondering if, since we haven't talked about the audit in South San Francisco, and I didn't know this was going to be on the agenda, so I didn't have very much time to prepare, if we could have this item come back to a meeting in South San Francisco so that the people on the other side of the hill have an opportunity to ask questions or understand what the budget is and take a look at it with the board?
I'm sorry, so just for clarification, you'd like to place on an agenda a repeat of this presentation?
Well, I don't know if we need to have the auditor come back, but I think it would be good to have this come back to the agenda in case there's any additional questions that come up between now and then that maybe we could get more information on. And so that we're not, you know, we're a countywide district, and it's really hard for people on the other side of the hill to get to meetings over here and vice versa. So I'm wondering if we could have the audit in both locations.
Mr. President, I would rise in opposition to that idea.
I just don't understand why we repeat this item. I mean, we've never really done that before on any item, have we?
Well, we do it with the budget. We have the budget.
Preparation of the budget is different from this type of audit.
I'm not feeling like I have all my ducks in a row as far as all my questions go.
I understand that, but Commissioner Brennan, you did ask quite a few questions.
I did.
You could certainly ask more questions.
One more question.
Okay.
What did the audit cost?
We voted on that. We didn't have a single audit.
Approximately
less than 23.
It was about 17 to 20.
Yeah, minus the 5. You're right.
And that's because the second year is easier to do than the first year.
Yeah.
And that's why we set it up. That's why the audit committee sets it up every year.
Right.
Can't wait for the third year.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Holson.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for your service to the district. I understand that you found no accounting irregularities and you gave us a clean bill of health. My question to you is a little more subjective in terms of the response that might be elicited. Given our level of annual budget, about $9 million a year, do you have any recommendations that aren't in your report that we might change our process somewhat to be more consistent with the amount of our annual revenues and expenditures?
I think that in terms of just suggestions, and that's if you're asking more of an operational type of question than an audit kind of question, but having been on both sides of the desk, so to speak, typically, you know, when you're operating a district your size, the only thing that is cautionary is based upon what your level of revenue is and how volatile it is. So you want, if the district appears to have essentially enough cash flow to support its operations and to contribute money to its fund balance every year. But a lot of times, don't want to bite off more than you can chew given the economic environment. And that's what I mean by that is essentially not changing the pattern to a point where you just start spending money because the economy is improving. You want to continue to be prudent and believe, you know, from what I just mentioned, that that's, you know, a prudent thing to have. Contributions to your fund balance every year. But don't change from a district that is more conservative financially to one that spends more. Because essentially that would put you in a more, financially speaking, it would cause the financial situation to deteriorate.
Just one thought on that. I'm sure you noticed that we have a mandated restricted fund, that being the Department of Oil and Waterways, which is now part of the creation of 1.4, which is our final 1.4 billion, which is our final payment.
Right.
We also have self-imposed restrictions, mm-hmm. where we sold property, we put that in restricted funds for our own benefit.
Right.
And we spend money on capital projects in the beginning of the year, we anticipate And sometimes they get rather large, $1.5 to $2.5 million. And when we do our financial adjustments, actual to budget, we can cut back on those capital projects. And that's kind of our saving grace, if you will. So we've never gone overboard and found ourselves not saving money for a rainy day.
Right.
You know, I'm sure you're impressed with $19.9 million debt we had, which is now $7.1 million.
Yeah.
And that's in trying economic times. So this organization has done one hell of a job these past years.
So just to confirm, if I can understand what you're saying, you're simply saying that we should not make any significant or major changes in how we're conducting our finances and how we're spending the money we are receiving.
Right.
Okay. Thank you,
Commissioner. I'm sorry. Does she have a question?
I don't think there's anything else left to ask.
Okay. Yes.
I would move to accept the audited fiscal year 2012-2013 financial statements and recommendations tonight.
Your motion. Do I hear a second? Okay, your motion is second. We've already had questions. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Brennan?
No.
Commissioner Hulsinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Parravano?
Aye.
Commissioner Tucker?
Aye.
President Bernardo?
Aye. So that's 4 ayes, 1 no. Motion carries. Thank you. So can we please take a 5-minute break and come back at 7:40?